Now, I requested to be one of the last people because I wanted to prepare you. It's getting late, and you can go to sleep as I tell you this story. And maybe you will. Are you prepared for that, Kurt? A lot of snoring in here. Have any of you noticed that our culture has gone through some really big changes lately? In other words, who the hell talks to anybody anymore? And the younger you are, forget it. If you go into a coffee shop where you're supposed to interact with people, do this, and nobody's talking or they're using their computer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm 83. I am on the rest of my life, the next 30 years, a mission. And that mission is that I insist that everything I do is face-to-face, and when I'm told we take that application over the phone, I say to them, no, thank you, I do everything face-to-face. And so I go in, and I get away with it, too. So ever since I was 2 years old, I have loved to ask people their stories. It's not a coincidence I'm here. I have always asked people, what is their story? My grandmother, grandfather, everyone I would meet, I'd find out about their lives. Finally, I got to high school. My dad was a doctor and had his office in our home. And he had a janitor, an African-American man that worked for him named Russell. And I would ask Russell everything I could ask him about what his life had been like. Now, remember, I'm 83, so now this is, I'm probably in high school, it's probably in the 40s. And I get fascinated with everything he's telling me, and my dad says, you know, this is costing me a lot of money, that you're spending all my money, he's not cleaning the house, and you're asking him to tell you about his childhood. And so I know many, many, many stories. And I've been really fascinated by something. My oldest grandchild, well, the one who was here earlier and his wife took ill and he had to take her home, he is 34. But every other one is 25 and under, down to 14, and never once in the history of my grandchildren have they ever said, Grandma, tell us what your life was like when you were growing up. Or sometimes I'd say, oh, let me tell you what it was like when I was growing up. We don't want to hear it. Do it another time. So stories are very big for me. And my dad used to tell these marvelous stories. My sister and I would sit on the stairs and listen to him tell these stories that we were not necessarily supposed to hear, but we knew his stories so well. And I'd say, oh, tell the new company about this story, and tell this story, and tell that story. My kids are so bored with any story I would ever try to tell them that they just space it right out. So the long and short is I love stories, and I love people's lives because I love people, actually. I have this peculiar, ubiquitous love of people. I'd go into my classrooms, didn't know a soul, and I'd be overcome with this sense of love for these people that I didn't know, and I'm sure a lot of you have had those experiences. So at any rate, that's pretty much the premise of my story, but when it comes to full circle, once I retired, and my children all grown now, they're in their 50s, and I'm still trying to learn non-attachment. I was saying that to Jean. I think it was to you, Jean, that I'm still working on non-attachment because I miss my children terribly. I'm living up in Santa Cruz, and they're living here, and it's torture for me to be away from them. So, and it's hard to make a move from a community where you're known and you know everyone and you've been there for years. So, at any rate, also it's hard to get old. You no longer are working. They take you. I was 78 when I quit teaching, And I would still be teaching, I tell you, I'd be teaching in a twinkling of an eye, given the chance, but they undercut the highest paid teachers to go for the lowest paid teachers. We all know that's going on in our culture. So when you get older, you're out of a job, your children are grown, and not particularly interested in nurturing you the way my grandmother was nurtured by her six kids and about 20 grandchildren. That family has changed. The whole idea of family is different. It's not the community that you can go to where the door is open at all times. As I say to my family, you are always welcome at my house, no matter what is going on. This door is always open to you. That is for every grandchild and their friends and my family and so on. So the long and short is I am very committed to verbal communication between people face to face. The rest of my life is going to be devoted to that. And the other day I was thinking, this being old really sucks, and I mean, not the word I really wanted to say. You know, it really goddamn sucks. It's lonely, it's hard, and where in the hell is the purpose? And I have volunteered at everything you could imagine. And one of the volunteer things I got to tell you about was peer counseling seniors. And so I went, and we were supposed to learn active listening. Now, am I taking too long? Active listening is where you feed back what they're saying. And all the seniors were feeling like I was. And it was, my children don't give me enough attention or time. I'm out of work. I'm desperately lonely. I have very little that I can think of to contribute. And contributing is what I do in this world. And I'm supposed to hear that from the other fellow seniors. By the way, I'm not wild about seniors, to be honest. And so I'm supposed to say, oh, yeah, you're telling me you're really hurting now. Your family has abandoned you, and you're not working, and you're desperately lonely, and you're having panic attacks and things of that sort. And then I said, and they're watching me do this, and they say, oh, you're very good at active listening. And then I said, have you ever thought of, and I was going to give an idea there that was a positive one, have you ever thought, they said, stop right there. You're not to give an idea about something positive. It'll steal their power. Well, my son is a therapist. He owns Tidelands Counseling here in town. He's a very good therapist. Pitch for son. But he is. And he said, that's not about stealing their power. What it's really about is liability. They're worried as all hell that you're going to tell them something and someone might do it. And then the whole organization is in trouble. So the day and a half after I started my 3-week peer counseling training, I resigned and said, this is manifesting panic attacks in me, and I'm going to not do this. And then I went home and had a marvelous thought. I decided I would develop a joy workshop. And if seniors wanted to take it, they were welcome, but they weren't the only ones welcome. So I put together a joy workshop that has 3 stages in it, which I won't get into, but it's going to be offered at Cabrillo College through Community Ed this fall. And I think I should offer it at the Mance and the Villages and places like that. So now to get back to everything coming full circle, I've been doing everything I could think of to see where I fit in at this age, and where do I belong, and how can I overcome panic attacks that I've never ever had before, and get through the next 30 years. So at any rate, I won this last week, it was, Kurt. I woke up, and that's when the panic attacks are, about 5 in the morning. They're horrible. They really feel horrible. And I'm suddenly laying there, and I'm thinking, oh, posterity. a posterity workshop. And so there in this sort of half sleep, I came up with the following. And it's this, the posterity workshop, it's not really a workshop, it could be. By the way, I'm going to be teaching conversation workshops, and I want to say one more thing about that before I leave. So give me the heads up when I have a minute left. Here is the card I developed, so I can read it without my glasses. Posterity, underlined, big print. Tell me your stories, and I'll write them for your loved ones. So this is my new business. And my new business card, and then I have my credentials at the bottom, sociologist, author, writer, blah, 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 and phone number and email thing. I don't know whether this will ever really come to pass, if anybody will do it, but think of all the people you and I know that have stories, and I'm one of them, and I should get myself in gear, and like, I do that anyway. I'm taking writing classes with someone wonderful. Anyway, thank you very much. I may do this, and anybody who wants a card, I'll be happy to give you one. They're very attractive, if nothing else. They might. The thing I also want to do is make a recommendation to you that is the most important book I have come across, one of the three most important of my life, and I would write it down if I were sitting in your chair right now. And it's not a good title. It's called The Living Room Revolution, and it's by Cecile Andrews, published a year ago, The Living Room Revolution. And at the very top of the book, it says, this book is about conversation and the creation of community. And on pages, note this down too, 68 and 69, she talks about the sacred experience of putting your attention on another person and listening to their story and then responding to it. And it is the most important book as a sociologist that I have read in year upon year. And I'm going to start developing conversation workshops. Hope to God I can get people in the 8th to 12th grade into them, because no one's talking at those ages. And I noticed that in families, no one's sitting around having conversations at dinner. They're busy with their machines. So anyway, there's a good tip on a great book, a badly titled, The Living Room Revolution, about the building of community, but more than that, the building and sustaining and creation of and maintenance of each other's identity that comes as the direct consequence of our interaction with each other, without which, to hell with it, life is no fun if you can't have a good conversation. So my life is forevermore committed to conversation.